Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. This is Love's Outer Limits, and I am your host, Amy Marsh, sexologist, hypnotist, and somebody who is completing a project begun 7 years ago, which was to read The Eye of Argon aloud in its entirety. I got through quite a bit of it and then just couldn't proceed. But for some reason, it seems important to complete this project here at the end of 2018. And to make this even weirder, I am dedicating this reading to my favorite trickster deity. Yes, I'm a polytheist, neo-pagan. And this is just something that I feel like I need to do for myself. And, you know, just complete the project. So, Eye of Argon, if you don't know what it is, look it up, you'll be astounded. Written by a teenager back in the days before there were computers or, you know, well, computers for home use or spell check, let alone spell check. This is a classic of purple prose, barbarian, sword and sorcery fantasy. I began reading it as a sexologist to comment on it. I'm looking now at these final pages. I'm not sure I'm going to get through in the half hour that this show allows me. If I don't complete it, I'm going to schedule another show for today and complete the reading. As I said, before the end of 2018, I will do this. Can I do it without laughing? Probably not. Here we go. When we last left Gregner, 7 years ago, according to my reading, in the last, well, the first half of chapter six, he was just flinging a corpse from a crypt and discovering that there's a false bottom, and he opens it up and looks below. So I begin the reading now. Raising the slab upon its bronze hinges, long removed from the gaze of human eyes, Grignar perceived a scene which caused his blood to smolder, not unlike bubbling molten lava. Directly below him, a whimpering female lay stretched upon a smooth-surfaced marble altar. A pack of grassy-faced shaman clustered around her in a tight, circular formation. Crouched over the girl was a tall, pot-bellied priest, his face dominated by a disgusting open-mouthed grimace of sadistic glee. Suspended from the acolyte's clenched right hand was a carven oval-faced mallet, which he waved menacingly over the girl's shadowed face, an incoherent gibberish flowing from his grinning thick-lipped mouth. In the face of the amorphous, we don't know what that means, broad-breeted female, I presume he means broad-breasted, stretched out alluringly before his gaping eyes, the universal whim of nature filling a plea of despair inside his white-hot soul, Grignar acted in the only manner he could perceive, giving vent to a hoarse, throat-rending battle cry. Grignar, I'm sorry, I'm already laughing, plunged into the midst of the startled shaman, torch simmering in his left hand and axe twirling in his right hand. Now, of course, this is the moment when all of a sudden my cats decide to wake up and scamper madly around the room. So if you hear sounds, that's what I've got. To continue, a gaunt, skull-faced priest standing at the far side of the altar clutched desperately at his throat, coughing furiously in an attempt to catch his breath. Lurching helplessly to and fro, the acolyte pitched headlong against the gleaming base of a massive jade idol, writhing agonizedly against the hideous image, foam flecking his chalk-white lips. The priest struggled helplessly, the victim of an epileptic seizure. Startled by the barbarian's stunning appearance, the chronic fit of their fellow, and the fear that Grignar might be the avant-garde of a conquering force dedicated to the cause of destroying their degenerated cult, the shaman, I think they mean, he means shaman, momentarily lost their composure. Giving vent to heedless pandemonium, the priest fell easy prey to Grignar's sweeping arc of crimson death and maiming destruction. The acolyte performing the sacrifice took a vicious blow to the stomach, hands clutching vitals and severed spinal cord as he sprawled over the altar. The disorganized priest lurched and staggered with split skulls, dismembered limbs, and spewing entrails before the enraged Ikordian's relentless onslaught. The howls of the maimed and dying reverberated against the walls of the tiny chamber, a chorus of hell fraught despair as the granite floor ran red with blood. The entire chamber was encompassed in the heat of raw, savage butchery as Grignr luxuriated in the grips of a primitive, beastly bloodlust. Presently, all went silent, save for the ebbing groans of the sinking shaman and Grignr's heaving breath, accompanied by several gusty curses. The well had run dry. No more lambs remained for the slaughter. The rampaging steed of death, having taken of Grignr for the moment, left the barbarian free to the exploitation of his other perusals. Towering over his head was the misshapen image of the cult's hideous deity, Argon. The fantastic size of the idol in consideration of its being of pure jade was enough to cause the senses of any man to stagger and reel. Yet thus was not the case for the behemoth. He had paid only casual notice to this incredible fact, while riveting the whole of his attention upon the jewel protruding from the idol's soul socket, its masterfully cut facets, emitting blinding rays of hypnotizing beauty. After all, a man cannot slink from a heavily guarded palace while burdened down by the intense bulk of a squatting statue, providing, of course, that the idol can even be hefted, which, in fact, was beyond the reaches of Grignr's coursing stamina. On the other hand, the jewel, gigantic as it was, would not present a hindrance of any mean concern. "Help me, please. I can make it well worth your while," pleaded a soft, anguish-strewn voice, wafting over Grignr's shoulders as he plucked the dull red emerald from its roots. Turning, Grignr faced the female that had lured him into this bloodbath, but whom had become all but forgotten in the heat of battle. "You," ejaculated the accordion in a pleased tone, "I thought I had seen the last of you at the tavern, but verily I was mistaken." Grignr advanced into the grips of the female's entrancing stare, severing the golden chains that held her captive upon the altar's highly polished face of ornamental limestone. As Grignr lifted the girl from the altar, her arms wound dexterously about his neck, soft and smooth against his harsh exterior. "Art thou pleased that we have chanced to meet once again?" Grignr merely voiced a side grunt, returning the damsel's embrace while he smothered her trim, delicate lips between the coursing protrusions of his reeking maw. "Lucky girl. Okay. Let us take leave of this wretched chamber," stated Grignr, as he placed the female upon her feet. She swooned a moment, causing Grignr to give her support, and then regained her stance. "Art thou able to find your way through the accursed passages of this castle? Mislurk. Who knows what that means? Every one of the corridors of this damn place are identical." I was at one time a slave of Prince Agafim. His clammy touch sent a sour swill through my belly, but my efforts reaped a harvest. I gained the pig's liking, whereby he allowed me the freedom of the palace. It was through this means that I eventually managed escape of the palace. It was a simple matter to seduce the sentry at the western gate. His trust found him with a dagger thrust his ribs. The wench stated, whimsicorackily. "Whoa. What were you doing at the tavern whence I discovered you?" asked Grignr as he lifted the female through the opening into the mausoleum. "I had sought to lay low from the palace's guards as they conducted their search for me. The tavern was seldom frequented by the palace guards, and my identity was unknown to the common soldiers. It was through the disturbance that you caused that the palace guards were attracted to the tavern. I was dragged away shortly after you were escorted to the palace." "What are you called, female?" "Carthena, daughter of Mincardos, Duke of Barwego." "Sorry, I can't stop. Whose lands border across the northwestern fringes of Gorzom. I was paid as homage to Agafim upon his 38th year," husked the femme. "And I am called barbarian," grunted Grignr in a disgusted tone. "Aye, the ways of our civilization are in many ways warped and distorted. But what is your calling?" she queried, bustily. "Bustily? Grignr of Ikordia." "Ah, I have heard vaguely of Ikordia. It is a hill country to the far east of the Norgolian Empire. I have also heard Agafim curse your land more than once when his troops were routed in the unaccustomed mountains and gorges," saith she. "Aye, my people are not tarnished by petty luxuries and baubles." course, he's trying to dig out the eye of Argon, but what do I know? They remain fierce and unconquerable in their native climes. And after reaching the hidden parcel at the end of the stairway, Grigner was at a loss in regard to its operation. His fiercest teeths were as pebbles against burnished armor. Carthena depressed a small symbol included within the elaborate design upon the panel, whereupon it slowly slid into a cleft in the wall. "How did you come to be a victim of these crazed shaman?" questioned Grigner, as he escorted Carthena through the piles of rummage on the left side of the trap. "By Agathim's orders, I was thrust into a secluded cell to await his passing of sentence. By some means, the priests of Argon acquired a set of keys to the cell. They slew the guard placed over me and abducted me to the chamber in which you chanced to come upon the..." I can't even read this word. "Sacrifice. Their hell-spawned cult demands a sacrifice once every 3 moons upon its full journey through the heavens. They were startled by your unannounced appearance through the fear that you had been sent by Agathim. The prince would surely have submitted them to the most ghastly of tortures if he had ever discovered their unfaithfulness to Sargon, his bastard deity. Many of the partakers of the ritual were high nobles and high trustees of the inner palace. Agathim's pitiless wrath would have been unparalleled." "They have no more to fear of Agathim now," bellowed Grigner in a deep, mirthful tone, a gleeful smirk upon his face. "I have seen that they were delivered from his vengeance." Engrossed by Carthena's graceful stride and conversation, Grigner failed to take note of the footfalls rapidly approaching behind him as he swung aside the arch portal linking the chamber with the corridors beyond. A man bloodlusting screech reverberated from his eardrums. Seemingly utilizing the speed of thought, Grigner swiveled to face his unknown foe. With gaping eyes and widened jaws, Grigner raised his axe above his surly mien, but he was too late. With wobbling knees and swimming head, the priest that had lapsed into an epileptic seizure rose unsteadily to his feet. While enacting his choking fit in writhing agony, the shaman was overlooked by Grigner. You know, that'll happen. The barbarian had mistaken the seizure for the death throes of the acolyte, allowing the priest to avoid his stinging blade. The sight that met the priest's inflamed eyes nearly served to sprawl him upon the floor once more. The sacrificial satyr grim. Blood splattered all around him, broken only by the occasional yelps and howls of his maimed and butchered fellows. Above his head rose the hideous idol, its empty socket, holding the shaman's infuriated gaze. His eyes turned to a stony glaze with the realization of the pillage and blasphemy. Due to his high susceptibility following the seizure, the priest was transformed into a raving maniac, bent solely upon wreaking vengeance. With lips curled and quivering, a crest of foam dripping from them, the acolyte drew a long, wicked-looking, jewel-hilted scimitar from his silver girdle and fled through the aperture in the ceiling, uttering a faintly perceptible ceremonial gibberish. A sweeping scimitar swung towards Grigner's head in a shadow blur of motion. With axe raised over his head, Grigner prepared to parry the blow, while gaping wide-eyed in open-mouthed perplexity. Suddenly, a sharp snap resounded behind the frothing shaman. The scimitar, halfway through its fatal sweep, dropped from a quivering, nerveless hand, clattering harmlessly to the stone edge. Cutting his speech short with a bubbling, red-mouthed gurgle, the lacerated acolyte staggered under the pressure of the released springboard. After a moment of hopeless struggling, the shaman buckled, sprawling face down in a widening pool of blood and entrails. You know, there's always entrails. His regal purple robe blending enhancingly with the swirling streams of crimson. "Merfurk, I thought I had killed the last of those dogs," muttered Grigner in a half-apathetic state. "Nay, Grigner, you doubtless grew careless while giving vent to your lusts, but let us not tarry any long, lest we overtax the fates. The path leading to freedom will soon be barred." The wretch's cries must certainly have attracted unwanted attention, the wench mused. "Oops, I thought that was going to be Grigner. By what direction shall we pursue our flight?" "Up that stair and down the corridor a short distance is the concealed entrance to a tunnel seldom used by others than the prince and known to few others save the palace royalty. It is used mainly by the prince when he wishes to take leave of the palace in secret. It is not always in the prince's best interest to leave his chateau in public view. Even while under heavy guard, he is often assaulted by hurtling stones and rotting fruits. The commoners have little love for him, lectured the narrow lady. It is amazing that they would have ever left a pig like him become their ruler. I should imagine that his people would rise up and crucify him like the dog he is. Alas, Grigner, it is not as simple as all that. His soldiers are well paid by him. So long as he keeps their wages up, they will carry out his damned wish. I think he means wishes. The crude implements of the common folk would never stand up. Under an onslaught of forged blades and protective armor, they would be going to their own slaughter, stated Carthina to a confused but angry Grigner as they topped the stairway. Yet how can they bear to live under such oppression? I would sooner die beneath the sword than live under such a dog's command, added Grigner, as the pair stalked down the hall in the direction opposite that to which Grigner had come. But not all men are of the same mold that you were born of. They choose to live as they are so as to save their filthy necks from the chopping block, returned Carthina in a disgusted tone as she cast an appeased glance towards a stalwart figure at her side, whose left arm was wound dexterously about her slim waist, his slowly waning torch casting their images in intermingling wisps as it dangled from his left hand. I don't know about you, but I don't think torches should dangle, do you? Anyway, presently Carthina came upon the panel, concealed almost above the other granite slabs and discernible only by the burnt-out cresset above it. As I pushed the cresset aside, pushed the panel inwards, Carthina motioned to the panel she was referring to, and twisted the cresset in a counterclockwise motion. Grigner braced his right shoulder against the wailing of the walling, concentrating the force of his bulk against it. The slab gradually swung inward with a slight grating sound. Carthina stooped beneath Grigner's corded arms and crawled upon all fours into the passage beyond. Grigner followed after easing the slab back into place. Winding before the pair was a dark, musty tunnel, exhibiting tangled spider webs from it, ceiling to wall, and an oozing, sickly slime running lazily upon its floor. Hanging from the chipped wall upon Grigner's right side was a half-moldered corpse, its gray flacking arms held in place by rusted iron manacles. Carthina flinched back into Grigner's arms at the sight of the leering, set in an ugly, distorted grimace, staring horribly at her from hollow, gaping sockets. This alcove must also be used by Agafim as a torture chamber. I wonder how many of his enemies have disappeared into these haunts, never to be heard from again. Oh, I'm sorry, that was Grigner pondering the hulking brute. You know, I thought it was going to be Carthina. Okay, let us flee before we are also caught within Agafim's ghastly clutches. The exit from this tunnel cannot be very far from here, said Carthina, with a slight sob to her voice as she sagged in Grigner's encompassing embrace. Aye, it will be best to be finished with his corridor as soon as it is possible. But why do you flinch from the sight of death so? Murph, you have seen much death this day without exhibiting such emotions, exclaimed Grigner as he led her trembling form along the dingy confines. The man hanging from the wall was Doyanta. He committed the folly of showing affections for me in front of Agafim. He never meant any harm by his actions. At this, Carthina broke into a slow, steady whimpering, choking her voice with gasping sobs. There was never anything between us, yet Agafim did this to him, the beast. May the demons of hell's deepest haunts claw away at his wretched flesh for this merciless act, she prayed. I detect that you felt more for this fellow than you wish to let on. But enough of this. We can talk of such matters after we're once more free to do so. With this, Grigner lifted the grieved female to her feet and strode onward down the corridor, supporting the bulk of her weight with his surging left arm. Presently, a dim light was perceptibly filtering into the tunnel, casting a dim reddish hue upon the moldy wall of the passage's grim confines. Carthina had ceased her whimpering and partly regained her composure. The tunnel's end must be nearing. Rays of sunlight are beginning to seep into. Grigner clammed his right hand over Carthena's mouth and with a slight struggle pulled her over to the shadows at the right-hand wall of the path, while at the same time thrusting this torch beneath an overhanging stone to smother its flickering rays. Be silent. I can hear footfalls approaching through the tunnel, growled Grigner in a hushed tone. All that you hear are the horses corralled at the far end of the tunnel. That is a further sign that we are nearing our goal, she stated. All that you hear is less than I hear. I heard footsteps coming towards us. Silence yourself that we may find out whom we are being brought into contact with. I doubt that any would have thought as yet of searching this passage for us. The advantage of surprise will be upon our side, Grignar warned. Athena cast her eyes downward and ceased any further pursuit towards conversation, an irritating habit in which she had gained an amazing proficiency. Two figures came into the pair's view. From around a turn in the tunnel, they were clothed in rich, luxuriant silks and rambling on in conversation, while ignorant of their crouching foes waiting in an ambush ahead. That barbarian dog is cringing beneath the weight of the lash at this moment, sire. He shall cause no more disturbance. Aye, and so it is with any who dare to cross the path of Sargon's chosen one, said the second man. But the peasants are showing signs of growing unrest. They complain that they cannot feed their families while burdened with your taxes. I shall teach those sluts the meaning of humility, order an immediate increase upon their taxes. They dare to question my sovereign authority. Ha ha! They shall soon learn what true oppression can be. I will. Shadowed bulk leapt from behind a jutting promontory as it brought down a double-edged axe. With the speed of a striking thought, one of the nobles sank lifeless to the ground, skull split to the teeth. Grignar gasped as he observed the bisected face set in its leering death agonies. It was Agathant, the dead man's comrade. Having recovered from his shock, drew a jeweled-encrusted dagger from beneath the folds of his robe and lunged towards the barbarian's back. Grignar spun at the sound from behind and smashed down his crimson axe once more. His antagonist lunged howling into a stream of stagnant green water, grasping a spouting stump that had once been a wrist. Grignar raised his axe over his head and prepared to finish the incomplete job, but was deterred halfway through his lunge by a frenzied scrape from behind. Carthina leapt to the head of the writhing figure, plunging a smoldering torch into the agonized face. The howls increased in their horrid intensity, stifled by the sizzling of roasting flesh, and then died down until the man was reduced to a blubbering mass of squirming, insensate flesh. Grignar advanced to Carthena's side, wincing slightly from the putrid aroma of charred flesh that rose in a puff of thick white smog throughout the chamber. Carthena reeled slightly, staring dazedly downward at her gruesome handiwork. I had to do it. It was Agathib. I had to, she explained. Sargon should be more careful of his right-hand man, said Grignar with a smug grin upon his lips. But to hell with Sargon for now. The stench is becoming bothersome to me. And with that, Grignar grabbed Carthena around the waist, leading her around the bend into the cave and into the open. A ball of feral red was rising through the mists of the eastern horizon, dissipating the slinking shadows of night. A corral, I think they mean corral, stood before the pair, enclosing two grazing mares. Grignar reached into a weighted-down leather pouch dangling at his side and drew forth a scintillant red emerald he had obtained from the bloated idol. Raising it towards the sun, he said, "We shall do well with bauble, eh?" Carthena gaped at the gem, gasping in a terrified manner. "The eye of Argon, oh, Kala!" At this, the gem gave off a blinding glow, then dribbled through Grignar's fingers in a slimy red ooze. Grignar stepped back, pushing Carthena behind him. The droplets of slime slowly converged into a pulsating jelly-like mass. A single opening transfixed the blob into forming, I believe is what he means to write here, into a leech-like maw. Then the hideous transgressor of nature flowed towards Grignar, a trail of greenish slime lingering behind it. The single gap puckered repeatedly, emitting a ghastly sucking sound. Grignar spread his legs into a battle stance, stealing his quivering thews for a battle royal with a thing he knew not how to fight. Carthena wound her arms around her protector's neck, mumbling, "Kill it, kill," while her entire body trembled. Well, you would think they would flee, right? The thing was almost upon Grignar when he buried his axe into the gristly maw. It passed through the blob and clanged upon the ground, drew his axe back with a film of yellow-green slime clinging to the blade. The thing was seemingly unaffected. Then it started to sluice up his leg. The hairs upon his nape stood on end from the slimy feel of the thing's bulk. The nauseous sucking sound became louder, and Grignar felt the blood being drawn from his body. With each hiss of hideous pucker, the thing increased in size. Grignar stood his foot about madly in an attempt to dislodge the blob, but it clung like a leech, still feeding upon his rapidly draining life fluid. He grasped with his hands, trying to rip it off, but only found his hands entangled in a sickly glue-like substance. The slimy thing continued its puckering, now having grown the size of Grignar's leg from its vampiric feast. Grignar began to reel and stagger under the blob, his chalk-white face and faltering muscles attesting to the gigantic loss of blood. Carthena slipped from Grignar in a death-like faint, a marrow-chilling scream upon her red rubish lips. In final desperation, Grignar grasped the smoldering torch upon the ground and plunged it into the reeking maw of the travesty. A shudder passed through the thing. Grignar felt the blackness closing upon his eyes, but held on with the last ebb of his rapidly waning vitality. He could feel its grip lessening as a hideous gurgling sound erupted from the writhing maw. The jelly-like mass began to bubble like a vat of boiling tar as quivers passed up and down its entire form. Now, most copies of The Eye of Argon stop here, but a lost ending had been found, and so here it is. With a sloshing plop, the thing fell to the ground, evaporating in a thick scarlet cloud until it retained its original size. It remained thus for a moment as the puckered maw took the shape of a protruding red eyeball, the pupil of which seemed to unravel before it the tale of creation, how a shapeless mass slithered from the quagmires of the stigmatic pool of time, only to degenerate into a leprosy of avaricious lush. In that fleeting moment, the grim mystery of life was revealed in Grignar's gaze. The eyeball's glare turned into a sudden plea for mercy, a plea for the whole of humanity. Then the blob began to quiver with violent convulsions. The eyeball shattered into a thousand tiny fragments and evaporated in a curling wisp of scarlet mist. The very ground below the thing began to vibrate and swallowed up with a belch. The thing was gone forever. All that remained was a dark red blotch upon the face of the earth, clutching things up. Shaking his head, his shaggy mane, to clear the jumbled fragments of his mind, Grignar tossed the limp female over his shoulder. Mounting one of the disgruntled mares and leading the other, the weary, scarred barbarian trotted, I think it means trotted, slowly off into the horizon to become a tiny pinpoint in a filtered, filed of swirling blue mist, I think it means field, of swirling blue mist, leaving the nobles, soldiers, and peasants to replace the missing monarch. Long leave the king. That is the end of The Eye of Argon, and I thank you very much for joining me for this reading, and I can't believe I got through that whole thing in half an hour's time. So Happy New Year. May 2019, be a lot better for the world than 2018 was, let me tell you. So thank you for listening, and, I hope you enjoyed this reading. I'm glad I finished it. Take care.